Welcome to today's discussion. For you, the professional who is navigating the incredibly complex and, let's face it, high-stakes world of superannuation and wealth management, staying ahead of these rapid industry shifts without getting bogged down in information overload is just essential. You need to know what is actually running your business and what is just an illusion.
Right, because the gap between how we think a fund operates and how it, you know, actually operates on the ground is widening every single day. And our mission for this deep dive into the source material is to cut right through that noise. We are going straight to the source to distill the high-level insights from the Q1 FY26 quarterly report.
Exactly. We have a really clear blueprint for today's exploration. We are going to look at four pivotal articles from this report. So we'll cover internal operations, the battle for member acquisition, the massive structural shift toward retirement income, and then finally, the reality of supply chain security.
It is a lot of ground to cover, but it all connects in a really fascinating way.
It really does. Okay, let's unpack this, starting right with the back office. Now, the first article in the report is actually the fourth in an ongoing series about superannuation's underdeveloped operational infrastructure.
Yes, the previous ones in past quarterly reports looked at core IT systems and interoperability.
Right, which are sort of the visible parts of the machine, I guess. But this article focuses on the actual processes. And I mean, my immediate pushback here is, don't funds already spend absolute fortunes mapping these processes out, like with those incredibly detailed BPMN diagrams?
Absolutely, the business process model and notation diagrams, yes.
Yeah.
But the report argues that this effort is largely theater.
Theater, like they are just putting on a show.
Well, because it's modeling without execution. You know, you end up with these beautifully color-coded documents that the board looks at and mistakes for actual operational uplift. But the actual process is running the business underneath. They continue largely as they did before.
Ah, I see. It's like buying this ultra high performance engine, but you are still driving it on a completely broken dirt road. Plenty of shiny tech, but the fundamental path is a mess.
That is a perfect analogy. The industry gap, as the report points out, really lies between straight through processing, or STP, which is basically the happy path, and the reality of exceptions.
Right, the happy path where everything just magically works.
Exactly. On paper, core member processes are designed for STP. You know, a contribution flows in, the system automatically validates the member details, and the account updates in milliseconds.
But in the real world, what happens? The employer data is garbled, or the tax file number doesn't match, or they breached a contribution cap, and suddenly the system throws an exception.
And that exception is where the actual cost and risk live for a fund. Traditional design treats these exceptions as edge cases. Like, oh, that's just something handled informally by the ops team.
Which means Bob, in accounting, just figures it out on a sticky note.
Exactly. Over time, resolving these exceptions becomes so heavily reliant on individual human knowledge. A specific processor knows the undocumented workaround for, say, a specific clearinghouse error. And that creates massively inconsistent outcomes for members, not to mention dramatically higher operational risk for the fund itself.
Wow. Okay, so I'm thinking the natural temptation for any executive right now listening to this is to just look at artificial intelligence as the ultimate magic wand. Like, oh, you have a slow, exception-heavy manual process. Just deploy a generative AI agent to read the errors and clear them. Problem solve, right?
You'd think so.
Yeah.
But the report issues a really crucial warning against doing exactly that. If you just replace human steps with an AI to get a quick win on turnaround times, you are, and I love this quote from the report, you are preserving today's inefficiencies in silicon.
Preserving inefficiencies in silicon. Oh, that is such a brilliant way to frame it.
Right. Because an AI performing a human-shaped process is just going to faithfully reproduce all the unnecessary handoffs, the poorly structured data, the brittle exception handling. It'll just execute a bad process at light speed.
Right. So you're doing the wrong thing, just much faster. So if we aren't using AI to just pave over the cracks, how do we actually fix the underlying process?
Well, it requires shifting from what they call subjective process discovery to empirical process mining.
Okay. What is the difference there?
Historically, mapping a process meant putting 10 managers in a workshop and asking them, hey, how does the work usually happen?
And human memory is flawed, obviously.
Totally. They describe the happy path. But modern process mining works entirely differently. It ingests the actual system event logs.
Like the raw data.
Yes. The digital timestamps created every single time a piece of data moves from a CRM to a registry to a payment gateway. The software traces the real unvarnished path of every single transaction.
So you are looking at the digital exhaust of the system to see where the traffic jams actually are, rather than asking someone to try and draw a map of the highway from memory.
That is exactly it.
Yeah.
And to execute this, the report identifies four specific pressure points. First is exception-first design, which means you optimize your architecture for the hardest transactions, not the easiest.
Makes sense. Start with the hard stuff.
Right. Second is process telemetry, because you simply cannot improve a system if you can't observe its event logs in real time. Third is embedding compliance controls as upfront design inputs rather than bolting them on as an afterthought.
Which always happens.
Always. And finally, treating process debt with the absolute same severity and budget allocation as technical debt.
Process debt, that's a great term. So if process telemetry and empirical event logs are going to completely rebuild the back office, we really have to look at what happens when these technologies shift outward.
Yes, to the front office.
Right. Because it really does not matter how efficient your internal operations are if you are losing the battle for the front door. I mean, member acquisition and experience. Now, we are seeing incredible hype around AI chatbots everywhere right now.
Oh, it is inescapable.
But I have to push back here. Superannuation is deeply personal. It's someone's literal life savings. People aren't going to just trust a generalized AI chatbot over their fund's own secure portal, are they?
Well, consumer behavior data suggests they actually already are. We are seeing explosive, sustained growth in what's called zero-click search.
Zero-click, like they don't click a link at all.
Exactly. People are abandoning traditional search engine results pages. They are turning to tools like ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Google Gemini to just synthesize the information for them. When Google's AI overviews generate an answer right at the top of the page, the median zero-click rate rises to around 80%.
Wait, really? 80% of users get their financial answer directly from the AI and never even click through to the primary source.
Yes. Which means they never see the fund's website. They never see the fund's branding or the fund's carefully crafted user journey.
So the decision is being made before the member even reaches the front door of the house.
Precisely. And the report contrasts two strategic responses to this exact paradigm shift drawing from outside our industry. They call them the Walmart approach and the Airbnb approach.
Okay, let's look at those. What is the Walmart approach?
So Walmart is leaning all the way in. They are embracing what is called agentic commerce. They are completely comfortable letting an AI be the front door. They allow third-party AI platforms to surface their inventory, refine consumer options, and even complete purchases without the customer ever leaving the chat interface.
Wow, they just surrendered the interface completely.
Right, because they are differentiating purely on product quality, pricing, and fulfillment speed.
Okay, so applying that to our listeners, if a superfund takes the Walmart approach, they are essentially accepting a future as a white label utility. They provide the investment engine, but ChatGPT owns the member relationship. But how do you even optimize for that? I mean, you can't just stuff keywords into a web page anymore to rank higher on Google.
No, SEO is basically dead in that model. You have to master generative engine optimization, or GEO.
GEO, okay.
It is a completely different mechanism. Large language models do not care about your backlinks. They care about data structure. So funds taking this route have to reconstruct their product disclosure statements, their fee tables, everything, with rigorous semantic tagging.
So it's about making the data easily readable for a machine.
Exactly. You have to structure your data in clear, factual hierarchies so the language model can instantly parse your net returns without hallucinating. You are literally optimizing your entire digital presence for a bot, not a human.
That is wild.
Now,
and what about the alternative, the Airbnb approach?
Airbnb is highly cautious. Their leadership has explicitly stated they do not want to surrender the front door to LLM chatbots because their entire market differentiation relies on identity, trust, and the specific aesthetic of their user journey.
Right, the feeling of booking an Airbnb.
Yeah, they view AI agents as potential lead generation, sure, but they fiercely defend their own ecosystem. They want to be the destination.
So bringing that back to superfunds, they have spent, what, 15 years trying to become destination brands? They've built incredible apps and member portals. If they want to maintain that Airbnb approach, they have to build highly accurate, defensive, internal chatbots to keep members inside their own walls.
Exactly, but the pressure is mounting. Because an AI intermediary naturally accelerates the commoditization of the entire industry, it forces a pretty brutal strategic choice for executives right now.
Which is?
Do you spend millions defending your proprietary member experience, or do you strip down your costs and focus entirely on being the most easily recommended white label product in an AI's training data?
That is a tough call. But let's follow the logical implications of this a bit further. It really doesn't matter if an AI seamlessly onboarded a member, or if they came through your beautiful proprietary app, if your underlying system cannot dynamically pay them when they actually retire.
Right, the end game.
We have to move from how members arrive to what they actually get, retirement income, which is our third article. To visualize this, I think of accumulation as like building a massive static vault. You just take deposits, buy units, deduct some fees.
Very straightforward.
But retirement is like engineering a highly complex plumbing system. You have to deliver a steady, calibrated stream of water for decades without ever running dry. But here is my pushback. We've been talking about retirement products since the Murray Inquiry back in 2014. Why is this plumbing still fundamentally broken a decade later?
Because the underlying mechanics of that plumbing are just staggering to build.
Yeah.
You know, an accumulation system only has to process bulk deposits and apply a unit price. It usually runs on a weekly or daily batch cycle.
So it's relatively slow and passive?
Yes. A retirement system, on the other hand, requires orchestrating concurrent income streams. It requires modeling dynamic longevity risk, calculating real-time tax implications across different asset classes, and managing daily liquidity to actually fund those pension payments.
Wow. So you are moving from a passive registry to a highly active orchestration engine.
Precisely. And because we haven't built that orchestration engine as an industry, Australia has actually slipped to 7th place in the Mercer CFA Institute Global Pension Index.
7th. That's surprising.
Yeah. We have a world-class accumulation vault, but our retirement phase lags far behind our global peers.
Mm.
But we finally have some clarity on the expectation.
Right, from Treasury.
Exactly. Recent Treasury guidance demands three core components for best practice. Funds must offer a lifetime income product, a standard account-based pension, and the ability to draw lump sums.
All seamlessly.
Seamlessly. And to facilitate that, funds must pivot their architecture entirely.
Yeah.
They have to start operating much more like modern banking and payments platforms rather than traditional record keepers.
Okay, but the technology constraint is only half the battle here, isn't it? Even if we build the perfect frictionless payments platform, we are dealing with human psychology. And the report talks about a massive drawdown problem.
Oh, the data on this is striking, truly. Retirees are terrified of running out of money, so they are just hoarding their capital.
Like refusing to spend it.
Exactly. They are drawing down only the legislated minimums. They are absorbing inflation hits to their lifestyle unnecessarily. And ultimately, they are dying with significant superannuation balances still remaining. They are living poorer than they need to, just to protect the vault.
So how does a payments platform fix human fear? I mean, a faster database doesn't make a 75-year-old retiree feel more secure about their longevity.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. But it does if you utilize sophisticated data segmentation. The report highlights what the exposure draft for the DBFO, the Delivering Better Financial Outcomes Reforms, calls targeted superannuation prompts.
Let's look at the mechanics of that, because that sounds like a buzzword. What does a targeted prompt actually do in practice?
It uses the fund's data to proactively nudge behaviors at critical moments. The system is constantly analyzing a member's balance, their current drawdown rate, and broader market conditions.
Okay.
So, if the logic engine detects that a 75-year-old member is only drawing the absolute minimum, but their balance has actually grown over the last 3 years due to strong market returns, the system automatically triggers a personalized prompt.
Ah, so it nudges them.
Exactly. It nudges them to review their income strategy, perhaps suggesting a slightly higher drawdown that their balance can easily sustain.
It is the shift from just holding the money to actively coaching the member on how to spend it safely.
Yes. And APRA is changing the rules of the game to enforce this. The performance tests are shifting focus toward the retirement phase.
So they won't just measure standard investment returns anymore?
No. They will be measuring income adequacy, income stability, and balance utilization.
Which means the regulatory pressure is aligning perfectly with the technological shift. But executing this, I mean, it requires a massive expansion of a fund's operational surface area.
It does. It expands it exponentially.
Which brings us nicely to the final and perhaps most critical piece of the puzzle from the report, supply chain security.
The foundational layer of it all.
Exactly. Because if we are expanding our digital footprint across third-party AI search engines, integrating advanced process mining telemetry, and rebuilding core registries into real-time payments platforms, That massively increases our exposure. We are plugging everything into everything else.
We really are.
The old cybersecurity model was essentially a castle with a moat, a secure perimeter. You authenticate at the firewall, and once you are inside the castle, you are trusted. But now it feels like that model is totally obsolete. It's more like a highly secure financial clearinghouse where everyone has a VIP pass, but every single individual transaction has to be continuously verified.
Right. What's fascinating here is that the report makes it incredibly clear that identity management is the new organizational perimeter.
Identity is the perimeter.
Yes. We are operating in zero trust architectures now. And it is not just about human employees typing in passwords anymore. It is about non-human identities.
Like bots.
Yeah. API keys, system accounts, the automated telemetry bots talking to each other across different cloud environments.
Speaking of cloud environments, and this is a big pushback I hear a lot, if a fund is paying hyper cloud providers like Microsoft Azure or AWS hundreds of millions of dollars, aren't they essentially transferring the security and availability risk to those massive tech giants? Like, surely AWS has a better security budget than a local superfund.
That is probably the most dangerous misconception in modern enterprise IT right now. Risk is explicitly not transferable through a vendor contract. You own the systemic risk.
Period.
Period.
Uh-huh.
And relying blindly on the sheer scale of those cloud providers creates massive blind spots for a board. The report illustrates this brilliantly by diving into the actual mathematics of cloud availability.
Okay, let's break that math down. Because the standard logic in IT is always that redundancy equals safety, right? So if I take my critical retirement payments platform and span it across two different premium cloud environments, let's say they each boast 99.999% availability.
The famous five nines.
Right, the five nines. If I use two of them, I should be practically invincible, mathematically speaking.
Counterintuitively, the report points out that spanning two five nines environments actually reduces your total system availability to four nines.
Wait. How does adding a second premium cloud environment mathematically decrease my overall uptime? That makes no sense.
It comes down to the mechanics of the integration layer between them. If you run an active-active setup across two distinct clouds, they have to constantly synchronize data with each other.
Okay.
If cloud A goes down, Cloud B needs to know exactly what the member's account balance was at that exact precise millisecond to take over seamlessly.
Without losing a cent.
Right. The software required to manage that continuous heartbeat, route the traffic dynamically, and resolve split-brain scenarios where the clouds disagree with each other. It is incredibly complex.
And complexity breeds failure.
Exactly. You're introducing overlapping failure domains. Duality is not a silver bullet. It introduces entirely new points of friction that drag down the mathematical probability of continuous uptime.
Wow. That completely flips the standard boardroom logic on its head. And the legal landscape around this is shifting just as fast as the technology, isn't it?
It is. The Corporations Act 2001, which governs directors' duties, and APRA's CPS 230 regulation now make systemic risk oversight of the entire end-to-end supply chain a mandatory requirement.
So they are recognizing how deeply interconnected these systems are.
Yes, but the most crucial legal shift detailed in the report is happening deep inside vendor contracts. It's the elevation of cybersecurity requirements from a warranty to a condition.
Okay, let's unpack the legal mechanism there for a second. What is the practical difference for a fund negotiating a software contract?
Traditionally, cybersecurity clauses were treated as warranties. If a vendor suffered a breach because, say, they failed to patch a server, the fund could sue them for financial damages, but the underlying contract remained intact. The vendor kept their job.
They just paid a fine, basically.
Right. Now, because these digital supply chains are so utterly vital to the survival of the fund, those cybersecurity obligations are being written as conditions of the contract.
Meaning a breach goes to the absolute root of the agreement.
It triggers immediate termination rights. It elevates security from just a technical perimeter issue to the literal legal foundation of the business relationship. But, you know, the report also stresses a really vital cultural point here.
What's that?
When an incident does occur and in a complex supply chain, mathematically, it eventually, blame does not belong in the incident room.
Right. Finger pointing doesn't fix the server.
Exactly. Speed, transparency, and coordination are what constrain the harm. Resilience is a shared responsibility across every single node in the network.
So bringing this all together, what does this all mean for you listening right now? We have covered immense ground today. We started by stripping away the theater of process mapping, looking at how empirical event logs and process mining are the only real ways to cure inefficiencies rather than just paving over them with AI. We explored that existential front door dilemma, whether to lean into agentic commerce like Walmart and master generative engine optimization, or build defensive walls to protect your brand identity like Airbnb.
Massive choice.
Huge. Then we examined the massive architectural pivot required to turn static accumulation vaults into dynamic, real-time retirement plumbing that actually actively nudges member behavior. And finally, we've seen how identity has become the new security perimeter, where legal contracts and cloud mathematics dictate your ultimate resilience.
It's a lot to process.
It is. But what is incredibly clear from the report is that these are not isolated IT projects. They are deeply interconnected facets of treating operational processes as intentional foundational infrastructure. These shifts dictate whether your fund survives as a sought-after destination or just fades into being a commoditized utility.
Which leaves us with a final, rather provocative thought to really build upon the findings of the report.
Let's hear it.
If an AI optimizes your back office, and it serves as your front door for member acquisition, and it actively nudges your members' retirement behaviors through targeted data prompts and fundamentally alters your cloud security perimeter, at what point does your fund's true competitive advantage shift entirely from the financial products you design to the digital infrastructure that delivers them?
Wow, that is the defining question for the next decade of wealth management. Because if you have the best financial engine in the world, but your digital infrastructure is still an unmapped dirt road, you simply aren't going to win the race. Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration of the source material. Take these insights back to your executive teams, apply them to your strategic planning, and as always, keep questioning the consensus.